Alrighty. So it's 2 p.m., so we'll get us underway. So basically, just to clarify for the public who may not be seeing this, the terms of reference, what got updated is we want to make sure that for all the committees for council, where there isn't specific rules, so the Heritage Forest Committee is a different piece, but for most of our committees, the elected representative is a non-voting chair of most of those committees. So I won't be able to cast a vote on anything, just so everyone's aware. There's also something from our CEO that I agree with, talking about respectful workplaces. I don't expect it to be an issue, just want to flag. I will be enforcing that if need be. I hope I don't have to go there. I doubt I'll have to go there, but just want to flag that. And without further ado, let's get on to the first item of business, which is the top agenda.
Yes, Mr. Chair, it's just, first off, I wanted to thank you for continuing to have this meeting in person and hybrid. Especially as it's the Committee on Accessibility, appropriately continue to have further accessibility. The video of the meeting won't be available to the public afterwards. Is that correct?
That's my understanding. The audio will be okay.
So because it's audio only, when I've listened in the past, it's really difficult to keep track of what's going on if people don't introduce themselves.
Okay.
Would it be possible to introduce ourselves?
That might be a good idea. Quick roundtable for the first meeting. So everyone give a brief one sentence.
Thank you.
So I guess we'll go clockwise and I'll start off. Scott Harrison, Councillor with the Town of Balkan Beach.
My name for Oceanside Emergency Communications Team.
Hi everybody, Shane Ward from Operations Support NCO at the Oceanside Emergency Communications.
Lori Sieber, I'm representing the Qualcomm Beach Residents Association.
Thank you. Mr. Jones, an observer.
Okay.
Amber Hobson, Access Oceanside Association.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm still on the internet. I'm very careful.
Sorry.
Pat Weber, Qualcomm Beach Seniors Activity Center.
Bill McQuitty, Eagle Crest Residents Association.
Bob Weir, Engineer, Town of Qualcomm Beach.
And Bruce Wall from Aerosmith Search and Rescue.
And Todd Crowell, representative of all components of the facilitation.
We're on the recording secretary.
Thank you very much. Okay, so what I'll try to do for this meeting is I'll try to mention the name of the person if someone wants to raise the point. Hopefully I got the name written down right, so I'll be very, I hope you bear with me if I got something written down wrong. So just first off, the adoption of the agenda, are there any amendments that are being proposed? Seeing none, Thanks. Sorry about that. Yeah, so we sort of talked about it a moment ago. Bernadette just reminded me about the change in the terms of reference. And the other thing is that I think there's a certain number of people, and I think we're looking at the number of people, too, for the 11. Oh, we just took that out. Okay. That's just a big thing. So just first off, since there's no amendments have been proposed to the agenda, I'm going to assume that it's just going to be moved by consent. Okay, so moved. Adoption of the minutes. Were there any errors or omissions in the minutes that were identified? Seeing none, I'll consider the adoption of the minutes approved as well by consent. Business arising, there is none for number 3. So first up, 4A is recommendations for council. So that's just sort of for the public information. These are people who were sort of appointed to this committee. And this committee is unique in that these organizations sort of forward their candidates to council and say, for each organization, here's the person we want to represent us. So for other committees, you will see sometimes council weighing in on things, not this one. And then for B, just the letter for Brook Road South referred to the Public Safety Committee for their comment. So I'm just looking, do we have that? Okay. Right. So I guess this is over to Mr. Weir, probably.
Yeah, so we got that in July. Concern about speeding on Berwick Road South, so from Fern Road out to Rupert Road, and with concern for the additional improvements that are going to be done in East Village to express some of their concerns with us. So in July 27th, we put out our traffic counter on South Berwick for 2 weeks to get some baseline data. It didn't really indicate that there was a huge problem. The average speed is 51 kilometers an hour. The 85th percentile, which is generally used as an indication of what's appropriate speed, is 61 or 62, so really no big variance there. There will always be a couple of speedy outliers for early morning commuters and stuff like that. We've got a high score of 146 southbound and 113 northbound. So, but like, you know, there's single events like that in almost every road everywhere. But anyway, I think the significant data is right now we don't seem to indicate a problem, but we will continue to do traffic monitoring on this section of the road, and especially after we see more completions in East Village.
Yeah, okay, that does make sense. And also, too, just for East Village, just forgive me, Mr. Mayor, if I'm getting a little off track, have you heard anything from the Island Corridor Foundation about what might be happening to, I'm thinking of the intersection of First and Memorial?
No.
Okay. For those of you who aren't aware, there's a Supreme Court case in D.C. Island Corridor Foundation was given a deadline of March of this year for the province federal government to fund the rail line. The funds haven't come forward since far, and we were waiting for First and Memorial to put a traffic light in because to get the signalization for a rail line is about an extra $250,000. So we'd prefer to not spend that money if there's no rail line. So that is just sort of checking. Is that something, talking about East Village, that'll sort of flow out of it eventually? You'll want to have a traffic light there if there's more cars going through. So
it's currently our lowest level of service intersection in town.
Yeah.
But the configuration of crossing arms and everything would seem to the public ridiculous if there's no rail line.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're trying to, we've so far convinced council to hold off on kind of signaling that it's
okay. And then I'm not sure how Councillor Westbrook did things, but I'm just going to check for this item. With the letter and also Mr. Weir's response. Are there any subsequent questions people might have about that letter on the board, on the committee rather? Okay, don't see anything. So I'll just forward the information to council the next meeting about the monitoring that's taking place, and I assume that'll be good. And then we'll also watch this as we do our update for the friendly transportation master plan, which hopefully we'll do twice during the term and try to include all these concerns that come up in that process.
We were supposed to conduct the update last year,
yeah,
and as a lot of resources, we're working on it now.
Yeah, yeah. So, so all this concern for Vita, and then move on to new business. So town project updates, and there are several. So I'm going to pass this over to Bob Weir, the town engineer again.
Okay, so the Vision Zero grant funding is for traffic safety improvements is a $20,000 grant program that municipalities can apply for, First Nations and some NGOs. We were getting heavily lobbied by the PAC, the Parents Advisory Group at Arrowview Elementary, to do something about the crosswalk at near the, I don't know what it was, the Christian Fellowship School. So that's a connector from sort of the collection area of Qualicum Woods across the busy arterial village way, and then they had pretty much a protected pathway all the way to the school. So they were very eager for us to apply for funding under this program. They were actually trying to make the application, give us this report. We were able to access unspent funds from ICBC. Other municipalities sometimes don't spend all the money that's allotted in a given calendar year. So if we could present a project that could be completed by their March deadlines, they made available some funding. So we've got $8,200 from that ICB funding towards the project. We estimate to be about $12,000. So we signed that contract. We're going ahead with it.
That's
hopefully to be supported by council.
I don't want to get ahead of council on that, but that's a great update.
Yeah. So the Vision Zero grant funding, we originally tried to look at doing some traffic calming in front of KSS. However, when we really started to take the project apart and see what we could do for around $20,000 or $30,000, there just wasn't anything that was going to appear as useful or you know, of good value. So we changed directions and we looked at the age-friendly transportation plan, and Currently, the third highest project identified is a Highway 19A waterfront safety study. Most of the projects at the top of the list have been done. The other two projects don't really apply. One of them was traffic on JSS. The other one is Downtown Trail Beach to Memorial. That probably won't be done until we see redevelopment of the old fire hall. So that's the one we've identified. We are doing ditch infill and parking improvements along that section already. We had originally identified some traffic calming elements to be installed, but we did not get all the grant funding we applied for. We applied for a little over $1 million. We got $700,000. We had to cut out some scope. That was one of them. So we are proposing to apply, or we have now applied for this grant in the amount of $20,000 to try to support the safety study for the waterfront. So that would be any additional elements of waterfront improvement that could improve the public safety there.
That sounds great. I'm sure we're all aware. Thank you very much, Mr. Weir, of those. The injury which happened a couple of years ago where someone broke their arm. And just for everyone who doesn't watch all of our council meetings, which I think is the majority of citizens in the town, Mayor Westbrook did mention last meeting talking about potential bike lane along the waterfront to reduce the interaction. Mrs. Peter.
Lori, sorry. Okay. I would like to say that Laura Dole, who was the spearheading person, should be thanked for getting that flashing light at the Christian Heritage School. She worked really hard on that. She came to the public open house on January the 9th and was very explicit in her interest, and I think that really spearheaded the issue. Like,
thank you. That's a reasonable. That sounds reasonable. Sorry, I wasn't there at the open house, so I'm relying on second hand. But I'll be sure to include that. And I don't know if there needs to be something more formal. I'm not aware of that usually happening as like a formal recommendation for the committee. But I'll be sure to mention that at the next meeting. All the same. But thank you. That's a good contribution. Now maybe number three, or Roman numeral three, the emergency generator.
Yes, we. I think that's installed. I don't know if it's operational yet. Has it been tested?
No, it's been installed.
Yeah, so the emergency generator that we had there was problematic. It generated a lot of smoke whenever it ran, and it went immediately into the air intakes for the pool. So we had to be very careful about when we could test on the generator. So that has been removed and replaced with it.
Yeah, and obviously that's something that needs to be done. That's a need to have. And then lastly, age-friendly transport plans.
So I mentioned that earlier. It was to be done last year. We have forwarded most of the areas of concern that have either been raised by the public or council to our transport consultant, and we're just sort of awaiting some scheduling of himself and senior staff to be able to run around and look at all those issues. He will then compile a series of recommendations to be brought to council for potentially including in an updated plan.
Okay, that sounds reasonable. Just so folks are aware, just to speak for myself, I didn't say this the first meeting, but if there's a specific intersection or concern you have, by all means raise it with members of council. But I'd like to move away from council meetings we're doing one-off, and so that we're trying to collect things on a quarterly or biannual basis, and then that goes to council. As a list of things to be included in age-friendly transportation plan update, just so we don't find that we respond to one concern, and then there's another area that's been a long-term concern and we pass over that instead. Yes, Mr. Provost.
Todd. So in the age-friendly transportation plan, there was a recommendation for traffic calming around on Highway 19A near Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was raised, we brought it to the attention of council, we also raised it with the CAO and Councillor Skipsey, and apparently it was going to be brought to strategic planning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if there's an update on that traffic comment.
We will look at the location again, but the last time we had the transportation consultant in town, he looked at the location, reviewed it, and he thought that it did not have the warrants for a crosswalk there, and I think in subsequent updates of the plan that will probably be removed.
Okay. So I understand it's, and I think you actually mentioned there was discussion previously about the crosswalk maybe not being the best solution there.
Correct.
But other traffic calming measures, like
driveway meters or increased road markings, because as you've highlighted, between Hall Road and Village Way, there's no friction on that section, and the data that you did collect before the crosswalk and the speed sign was implemented did show a high level of speeding on that area.
It did, but again, like I say, like you pointed out, there's not a lot of friction there. There's not a lot of concern. There's not a lot of incidents. So I think what we see as the problematic element there is when there are night events at Miller Gardens and there's a lot of parking and sessions walking. And I think a previous study has identified them continuing to use some kind of flashing indicators of the risk that occurs on those evenings. But otherwise, we did not see it as a highly problematic section.
So I guess the difficulty is, now that you have the crosswalk there, if there's still no friction coming from Village Way towards the village or town, and that crosswalk there, people are going to have a false sense of security, and there's still going to be speeders. And that's why we raised the possibility of some traffic calming in that section from all the way back.
But we're not proposing a crosswalk there.
No, you've got an existing crosswalk to come through.
Yes.
And it's down a hill and around a corner. So you've got high-speed vehicles coming towards that location, but people using the crosswalk are going to have a false sense of security, and yet there's still speeders coming towards it.
I think we've done about as much improvement for that crosswalk as we can. We have pre-warning with the speed feedback sign for drivers. We have pedestrian-activated flashes at the crosswalk.
And we thank council for those two traffic calming improvements and the medians and everything at Hemsworth. The problem still exists as you go back from Hall Road towards Village Way.
Okay, so I'm just going to stop. This might be kind of more appropriate for our email.
We've sent numerous emails on the and we haven't got any replies.
Replies have been sent.
Yeah.
And we do not consider the section to be highly problematic.
Yeah. I just suggest to, like, we move away from debating single individual things, even though it might be really important to, say, the Qualcomm Woods Residents Association or another group of people. We also have to consider this year, for those of you who didn't go to strategic planning sessions, there's a lot of things that are planned to be done in 2023. So there's going to be probably a bit of a tax hike. The RDN, I think, is 11% right now, what they're looking at this year. I'm not sure where the town would be, probably less than that. But I just want to highlight that between how much time staff have and then how big the tax increase is already, we're just going to want to make sure that we're looking at all the things that need to be done in the town and try to move away from sort of like individual projects.
I guess the difficulty is you mentioned you prefer that we don't go directly to council with individual issues. This is the Public Safety Committee. So why wouldn't we be able to raise them here for discussion?
Because usually committees function on a matter of actions brought from council to the committee. It's usually not so much from the committee to council. That's just the way committees are better run, in all honesty. Now, because it's going away from flagging in the meeting, yes, it's been flagged, it's been discussed, you've got a response. It might not be the response you want. But endlessly beating around the bush on this topic isn't going to change the facts on the ground. And we have to go back to...
We don't have any facts. We have Mr. Weir's opinion that it's not a priority.
No, we have evidence that this is getting out of line.
It's on the age-friendly transportation plan. It's in your plan as a priority item.
Yes, but it's where is it in the priority item? And that's so the pathway above other projects. We're going around in a circle, and you need to choose what sort of way you want to comport yourself in a meeting, right? This isn't really a productive conversation at this point.
Well, the difficulty is we're not receiving correspondence back from flies to our correspondence. You're indicating you prefer that items not go directly to council. So we want to know where then do we raise this issue?
No, you don't raise things from the committee to go to council, right? You don't get a series of one-off as recommendations from the committee is what I'm saying, right? So we've sort of debated this to death, though, but I don't think there's any real progress. There's also 5G as a roundtable where if you want to have a pretty long conversation, that's where we have it.
No, it's just age-friendly transportation plan came up, and I knew it was on the age-friendly transportation plan as a priority, so that's why I raised it at that point.
And it was the factual evidence around that was addressed. Like, I think we've done that conversation to death now. I don't
very productive at this point. So, yeah?
I'm just reading what we just got. And I know I'm new to this committee, but it says we will send things to the council consideration. Hopefully, the council sends it to us and we send it in now.
Yeah, well, usually what happens is, like, for all of you...
That's the purpose of our committee.
The usual way that the council committee functions best is you don't necessarily do a series of one-offs. Yeah. Yeah, but it's not recommendations to council, right? So that's just...
Right there. Part C. Report your findings for council's consideration. It goes both ways. You're right. It goes from council to us, but also from us to council.
Council considerations, recommendations from town staff. That's just not the business on the agenda, though, right?
Yeah. So that's how it goes. Somebody brings it up to the
floor. Well, I could ask the rest of council. My understanding is that's not where it goes, but that's a good thing to clarify, because I don't think it actually is with the wording.
I see.
And I'm reading it too, and I don't think it's actually what it says. But that's the thing I'll follow up, and the next thing you can go for that.
Yes, you just handed this out.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it.
Well, we see.
Okay. So this is also, again, not a very productive conversation, but report findings opinions to council. So the business that's on our agenda has been referred to the board, the committee, rather, and then the committee deliberates on that, reports out to council on that, their recommendations on a specific business. Free-flowing, coming out with new recommendations isn't really something that we should be doing. That's just not the way I see it being productive. Now, I'll check with the other members of council to see how they're doing their committees.
Okay.
But, and we'll talk about the next meeting, but I don't think endlessly debating it is really going to be a good conversation. No, thanks for drawing attention to that. And it's a good conversation to have, too. Just make sure it's the same in every committee. Okay, so roundtable time. Sorry, just going to start going to this.
Not too much. As you know, we have some radio equipment next door in next little room across here. We notice now that somebody is also moved into there like it's an office, and we're wondering what's going on. Is that room going to be no longer usable for us, or?
Okay. That's a good question for staff to follow up on. And then Shane? And then Shane, is there anything else, sorry, before I...
No.
Okay. Sorry, but
so my role is just kind of advisory person to the committee, so just in terms of public safety for us, just a little update. I think I brought it up last time that for some of our traffic enforcement, which comes up quite a bit in this community, everybody knows that the Valtex were taken off of our cars for insurance, and that money that ICBC saved on the Valtex, a lot of that, some of that money went to a project called ALPR, which is automatic public restitution. So you may think that the police car behind you doesn't know if your insurance expired, but we have sensors up there that can tell us everything about that person who owns that car, whether they have insurance, whether their license is valid, whether they're prohibited from driving, whether they have a warrant, anything like that. So we were funded, we applied for funding for one ALPR, and the equipment arrived last week, so we're just getting the tech stuff done up on our computers in the car to have one dedicated ALPR, so our three dedicated traffic enforcement people are excited about that. So they can surreptitiously sit there on the highway and have the computer do the work for them, and they can determine who to stop.
I also decided to, you'd be surprised how often people take a razor blade to the old decals and put them on their car. And you, as a person who has basically had someone steal your decal, you have to come and pay money to ICBC to get that situation addressed somewhere. It wasn't ideal. If you had to replace your plate, I think that wasn't free. I think the decals were free, but I think the plate wasn't. It's been a while since I've done it. It's 6 years, so if I'm getting it wrong, ICBC, my apologies. But
decals will be done in March, so yeah. So it was like the police community was a little bit concerned about not having decals because it was a trigger for us, right, to see whether a decal was damaged or missing or whatever. But now with at least one ALPR, we're excited for that. So it was a quick rollout by ICBC. So.
And just to follow up, would that also help with stolen vehicles?
100%.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And just a reminder, any traffic stuff, any complaints about the meeting, any, please make sure you phone the attachment as well. You can phone the town and report your concerns, but anything that is sort of ongoing, I mean, we will do our best to take some enforcement action. But we'll also rely on the town as well, too. They have speed counters, and we have our speed bus volunteers. You can also go out and do some sort of education on that front. But again, encourage everybody who does have a concern in the community to just show up and what we can do as well. At least document it and track it.
I think we have three. Four, yes, okay. But they're usually pretty quick. I know in the past I've mentioned a road to the town engineer. It took a bit of time. Within a month or two, they were starting to get data on that section of road.
Yeah, well, we started on a regular location schedule. And, you know, if we can fit in a special request, we'll try. But we're also trying to collect data for traffic and parking studies of town.
Yeah. Okay, and is that anything, James? Awesome, thank you so much. Lauren, please.
I'm bringing to the Public Safety Committee the request by the Qualcomm Beach Residents Association to talk about streetlight pollution.
Okay.
Public safety is not what started the LED conversion. The federal government mandated the old HPS lights have PCs in them, but we mandated that had to go. And so BC Hydro owns the lights on one pole, and the town leases them. So we lease 550 lights, and these are the only lights that have been changed by BC Hydro so far. The problem is, BC Hydro, like other provinces, gave their municipalities a choice for LEDs and our base lights. We could have 4,000 or 3,000. 4,000K is the high blue light color, and 75 watts for heavy traffic areas, and 3,000K, 39 watts, so lower color, closer to the orangey HPS lights that we have, and 39 watts, a lower intensity, and less energy use for residential areas. They put their choices on their website, and our town staff chose 4,075 watt lights for residential areas, the same lights that were used at the roundabout, and those were chosen about 10 years ago. So things have changed since then. What year was that, 2012?
Yes.
Year?
They're not exactly the same lights. The ones at the roundabout are higher wattage now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. The problem is this caused excessive light pollution. The intention of the LEDs is not our lived experience. On the town website, it's got information from the BC Hydro Toolkit, and it states, will the LED streetlights reduce light pollution? Their intention was that the LED streetlights are designed to focus light downward towards the road and the sidewalk where it's needed and limits light shining upwards or into nearby property. That's their intention. And because of this, nighttime visibility of roads and sidewalks will improve while also reducing light pollution. And we'd like to go with that intention and have those lights focusing downward on the road, not on people's property. And we would like that light pollution reduced. So, there needs to be a balance. There needs to be a balance between the charm of the town that we state in our community plan and the glare and the sky goal that we have now. There needs to be a balance between the ability of residents to sleep in their homes and the availability of shields or light trespass. Like anything else that comes into your private property, it's trespass. And you can't. In that way, you keep the light on the street, which was their intention. And also, there's an economical saving for years and years if you go with lower wattage, because higher wattage is just wasting light, wasting energy money. We also want to point out that there's no safety issue. Other towns that have been canvassed up and down the island and into the interior, they do not have 75 watt lights. They have 3,000K 39 watt lights, and they are safe, and they have insurance. The 2200K, really orangey color, degraded lights that we presently have working at, that we had, were working on 55% of the value, and we were safe. Even in our own town, we have Chartwell, most of them in Chartwell, and most of them in Eagle Crest are not 75 watt 4000K lights. So we were wondering if there is, pardon me?
I think some of them do.
Oh, we're about to include them.
Yeah. Oh. I think it goes from the background.
Okay. All the LED choices offered by BC Hydro are safe, according to their customer toolkit, which is on the town website. Other towns choose, right? There's no insurance issue. Other towns have insurance. Other towns with 3,000K 39 watts have insurance. Nanaimo has 1,456 DC Hydro Leaf Street Lights, 151 watts. They have insurance. So do Duncan, Vernon, Gibson's, and Cubs. All of those places have the lower level lights. This is what's going to meet our OTP. It's not a risk for walkers to have a lower level wattage, because any LED is better than the downgraded light they were working at, 55%. It's not a risk to go half cold. We have a major arterial road, Rupert Road, between Fire Hall and the airport, and there are only lights on there every 11 to 12 poles. In residential areas, on every other pole. That works. We are not removing lights, we're just replacing their bulbs. If somebody wants a light removed, that is a possibility as outlined in BC Hydro's introduction to LEDs. It's a possibility and the town can ask for that at any time. We're not reducing quality by going from 4,000K to 75 watts to 3,000K 39 watts. Lower wattage, lower color. Blue. This 4,000 K 75 watt big bulb floods intensely white bright light onto roundabouts and industrial areas. There's no quality for residential areas in that. None whatsoever. Residents don't need that. Small streets don't need that. Risk does increase when driving at an increased speed. We know this. 4,000K is meant for arterial roads where the speed is higher. We can see a lot better if we have 4,000K, but it's meant when you're going at a speed. When you're going down a residential street, you don't need that bright light to help you see. You have headlights. Doing more research into this, like drones and whatever, have been mentioned, and we just don't think that's necessary. It's not necessary to spend that money. Council will be discussing this March 1st. We have some solutions. First of all, install 3,000K 39-watt lights. They're safe. They're effective. BC Hydro accepts them. Other towns accept them. Insurance accepts them. There's no mix. Cost analysis makes that quite possible, but that's not in the public safety committee.
Okay.
Hi, Joe.
Sorry, I thought you were done.
My apologies. Okay. BC Hydro's experienced streetlight design crew have remedies for light spill and light trespass, including shielding. This is possible as BC Hydro laid out in their whole idea there. Standards are on their rate increase of 1701 on page 133. Also, we have suggestions from the Illumination Engineers Report that says we have used an approach that reduces obtrusive light. These ideas are straightforward and effective. have 5 or 6 in that illumination engineer's report that we can do. So I'd like to ask Mr. Weir, has DC Hydro come in to fix those misalignments?
DC Hydro did not contend that there are any misinstalled lights. They said they're all installed to specification.
Obviously not, if there's light spill and light trespass, so we'll work on that.
Okay, so Lori?
Yes?
Those sort of comments are not helpful. When you say obviously not, that's not helpful.
Well, we debated the tech council
the last meeting, right, at length. I would suggest to you, just in terms of some of the things you said, and not to get into a long debate on this, but I would point out, I would strongly suggest citizens read the entire Illumination Engineers report, including the last agenda, from top to bottom, read the whole thing. Because what it did say is that because of how we space out our lights, that's why the problem. Yeah, so basically we have 1 light every 2 poles, more or less, than other communities, and that's why going down to 39 no longer meets the safety standards. If initially, back in the day when we first got our lights, God knows when, decades ago, we'd gone closer in proximity of lights, then yeah, absolutely, we could go down to 39, safe, it's fine. But again, that's later on the Illumination Engineer's report. He gives a series of 4 sort of recommendations. I'd suggest that's a good page. I can't remember the exact page in our agenda, but that isn't an issue which is going to be debated by council already.
Right.
On March 1st, it wasn't referred back to the committee in the last meeting either. So, you know, we've dealt with it several times. I think it's going to be about 7th meeting, I think. We've talked about 3 lists. So I think the supposition that there's new information coming forward, I don't think there really is at this point. So I am glad you're raising it, because it is a live issue. It's an important one. But I suggest we don't think that this committee would really be doing any business on it if it hasn't been referred by council, and it is already a live issue. And it sounds like it's going to be dealt with on the first, once and for all, one or another. So,
right, Scott, it's not a debate. We're bringing up something to the Public Safety Committee because that's what we're supposed to do. It says here we report Public Safety Committee, takes information from this committee, and takes it to council.
No.
Report its findings and opinion to council.
On business referred from council?
No.
That doesn't say that, but Lori is productive. So I thank you for raising the key issue. That's great. Is there anything else in the key area that you want to raise?
From the Qualcomm Beach Residents Association, this is their highest priority.
Thank you very much for making that clear. Okay, I'll move on to the next person. Yeah.
Just at one point in one of the council meetings, you mentioned that individual citizens who had complaints could report it to the town and it would be investigated. Is that still the process that they would follow?
I believe we looked at all the ones we already have current complaints on, Mr. Weir. Is that correct? Yes. Okay.
So if there's any new ones coming forward, get a hold of the town?
Yeah, we'd be getting a hold of the town.
Okay.
But at the same time, there'd be a council decision on the first. And so I'd be cautious about allocating staff resources if this can make change of direction on the first, right? Because if you change direction, then change direction again, it might be a bit wasteful. But definitely people should be getting in touch with the town and at least the staff on how to do things operationally. That's not really a council way.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then I think it was Mr. Jones, was that?
No, sir.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, you're just an observer. My apologies. Sandra, is there anything from AXA?
AXA's Ocean Side has resumed active operations post-COVID. Those are on the clinically extremely vulnerable list, so we really did suspend pretty much most things. Sadly, Fitness for All initiative, the gym that was hosting Fitness for All, was a casualty of COVID, and a great deal of effort went into trying to work with the RDN to initiate Fitness for All again, and in the end, they declined to provide any support, though they were happy to collect the participation fees. So we're back to square one, though we have a space. We have people with expertise prepared to instruct fitness instructors on how to use the equipment. We have an identified need in the committee, and we have thousands of dollars of equipment which has been purchased. We are back to square one. So that is a great disappointment, but that's life. And so individuals with disabilities. therapy or travel to Nanaimo or Comox in order to be able to exercise with the necessary equipment until we get things settled. And, of course, every municipality will be aware of the new, relatively new British Columbia's with Disabilities Act, and we have questions out about the need for advisory committees in every community or community joint committees or what's going on. But I would think that Parksville and Holcomb Beach at least have access to our committee, which meets the requirements of a minimum of 50% persons with disabilities or their caregivers.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
Oh, yeah, and just so everyone knows, I forwarded a document on to our CAO about that. It sounds like she's aware of it. I hope she's gotten back to you on that. I don't know if you have.
I haven't noticed it yet.
Okay.
It's not.
But it is a conversation in the background as a council, and so, yeah.
Yes. There was some discussion of having a joint RD in Holton and Parksville, at least at the engineering level, and Ocean Access Oceanside has expressed concern that with such a broad spectrum, most of the attention of the committee might be directed to Nanaimo rather than the smaller communities.
Yeah.
And we are in the process of, we have representation from Golden Beach and Parksville councils at SS Oceanside, and we are in the process of exploring a representative from the particular RDN district for rehab. I forget which term they
area.
Thank you. So we're exploring having a representative from those areas that access Oceanside, but have not yet identified an individual who might be willing to take up an interest in accessibility. So we're trying to provide the service.
And good luck with your cancer treatment. I'm very sorry to hear about that.
Oh, I'm well past the really aggressive stuff.
Okay.
15 months of chemo is enough for anyone. But I'm still on one other drug that leaves me.
Good luck.
Okay.
Just a quick aside, maybe you could just contact Araby at the Bradley Center because she's very interested in access.
Bradley Center?
Yeah, name is Araby. She's the manager there.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'll reach out.
Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you.
First off, the Qualcomm Beach Seniors Activity Center is back full bore. We're back up to pre-COVID numbers in membership, so we're pushing just over 1,000 members now. The concerns remain, one concern remains relatively the same, and that is the Qualcomm Road, Mance Road intersection and the railway. People either rolling through or speeding through the stop signs that are at the railway, considering that the railway isn't in operation and really not caring. But when there's two stop signs, people obviously expect that if they're at one stop sign, the people at the other are going to stop, and they don't. So that area remains a concern. The other area is something new, but it's actually a cross between two of the committees, the Safety Committee and the Airport Committee, and that is the lighting and lack of sidewalk or walking area coming from the parking lot to the main terminal. For people that have mobility issues and vision issues and hearing issues, these present problems that aren't of interest to people that don't have them. But when you have somebody dropping someone off that has a severe mobility issue, that has a minor mobility issue, fine for them to drop them off at the terminal then go around and park. And then they get out with they take the canes and walk up along the driveway going up towards the terminal. That's a concern for people.
Mm-hmm.
And then beyond the terminal, because there is an airline that's operating beyond the terminal, and there are young people that are accessing it for cadets, and during the winter months, the lack again of a walking area on the side of the road and any parking beyond the terminal creates some hazards for both the cadets and seniors that are using the airline that's operating further along the road there.
Okay.
So perhaps we can draw that to the airport's committee as well. I understand you said
that'd be reasonable.
And that's it.
Lovely.
We can get those concerns addressed. That'd be wonderful.
That'd be great. And I'm glad to hear the senior center is doing so well.
Oh, crazy busy.
And I'm sorry, I'm just terrible at the inside to make sure I wrote down. I think it's Bill's next.
That's Bill. Yeah. Thank you. I've only got a couple of things. First, I wondered if the staff, or you direct the staff, or you could, or somebody could direct the staff to tell us who's responsible in the town hierarchy for emergency preparedness.
Mm.
Need to know that we're doing a bunch of work in Eagle Crest trying to get that organized, I guess is a good way to
say
it, to help people understand that they ultimately are responsible for themselves, but we need some help getting the town in terms of preparedness. That'd be the first thing, so we can get something from the town.
Yeah.
Good. Secondly, and again, it's on the, I forget what it's called, walking blitz, and you've heard this from me before at Yanbury about the crossing of the highway there with no hash marks or anything to indicate people might walk across that area. Don't know. I know it was reported a couple of times, and it's one of the issues. The second issue on the walking trails, and this may not be the right place to put it forward, but some of the trails are on private property.
Hmm.
And the question comes down to very simply, does the town carry insurance for those trails?
Okay. So would it be like things on the golf course property?
And a few things like in the bluffs.
Okay, in the bluffs. Okay.
And the stairways.
Oh, the bluffs and the stairways, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
We understand that it's used by the public. We understand that it was dealt with years ago.
Yeah.
But there is a liability issue with anything that goes up and down that people walk on.
Yeah.
And the winter and even in the summer, it doesn't matter, it's when it's wet. And we carry insurance, but the question comes down to does the community or the town carry insurance for the walking trails?
And so the Eagle Crest Residents Association had a meeting with myself and the CAO about a week ago, and that was flagged as an issue that isn't immediate, but is coming up increasingly.
Who had a meeting?
The vice presidents of the ERA, Eagle Crest Residents Association, but they did flag that as an issue of concern. And what the CO needed to do is they just wanted to double check what the covenants were on the land and all the legal particulars.
I'll go back to the group saying why they don't want to include some of their other counselors in the thing that I'm putting down the table here.
Oh, no, it wasn't really like put on a table per se. It's just an informal meeting with the liaison. I'm the liaison for the ERA.
Sure.
So okay.
So it's just in hand, and that's the only issue. So.
Yeah, but no, that's an important point, too, of the liability, because the stairwell is sort of a bit of an imposition, and then you're going through the bluffs. If you're accessing the stairway, and is that the best way?
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's fair. Sorry, Tom?
So was there an answer to the first one? Who in the town is responsible for the EMO?
For the EMO, I know the position is still vacant, so it's sort of filled interim, I think, by the director of planning, was it? On a temporary basis, but there is an overarching sort of like EMO Oceanside. Parcel has their hire for that role because both Parcel and Qualcomm Beach lost someone at the same time to fill that role. I don't think we fill that position yet, to the best of my knowledge.
The Parcel person is Kate Polkoff, P-O-C-O-C-K.
Yeah, I've talked to her because there was nobody to talk to at the town here, so I spoke with her in terms of getting some insurance and so forth to get our debts in a row.
Yeah, because the gentleman we had before is doing a very good job of that. I really like the job Mr. Damon did. Hopefully you do get a decision still too at the end of the day.
Okay.
But
I think train or?
I don't know. I think there's a bit of concern about stepping on Parcel toes and having two things at the same time. But I don't have a timeline.
Okay.
But I can check.
Thank you.
That's a good question.
I appreciate it.
It would be useful if you let us know.
Yeah, for sure.
Wait,
that's pretty useful. Sorry. I didn't see you.
And if you have residents with particular disabilities, there are some resources about the specific unique needs of individuals with disabilities or for the caregivers on the Access Oceanside website.
Okay. I'll make sure that.
Oceanside.com.
I'll make sure that goes out too. Thank you.
We did a lot of research, and they're all evidence-based recommendations. And the province has a few resources as well.
Yeah, you've been like our area is technically overdue by a little bit for a very large earthquake. They happen to be 200 years or 300 years up from the last one. And that for me would be the worst case scenario, that a lot of water and sewer is disrupted and we have a lot of single seniors on their own. We're a bit vulnerable. So, no, it's good information to have.
There's a new, I don't know if Tom has it or not, there is a new pamphlet that was prepared. I must have a copy with me. Anyway, on emergency planning, I guess I didn't bring a copy. But there's a new one. When I say new, 2017, which was newer than the one I got when I moved here in 2008.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I don't know who distributes it.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good question for Sia, and see if that's something she should follow up on. Yeah. Okay. Anything else, though?
No, that's all.
Okay, thanks so much for your time. Bob, anything that leaps out at you?
No, please, remember.
Okay, yeah, sorry. And then next, sorry, I did terrible with names. Bruce.
Yeah, I've got nothing to introduce at this meeting on behalf of Search and Rescue.
Okay. And Tom?
Just one follow-up question. Back in August and in November and at our meeting in December with the GAO we raised residents' concerns about the narrow section of Hemsworth Road between Chester and Dogwood. The town has collected data and it did support there was speeding. It wasn't a high volume of speeding, so the RCMP has given us feedback that it's not going to be a enforcement priority.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's very narrow there. The BC Transportation Act does allow for narrow roads like that under 8 meters, and I measured it at about 4 point something. So it does apply that the town can make it a 20 kilometer an hour zone. The pedestrian use area isn't very developed. Mr. Weir at the September meeting advised that there was a plan at one point to improve the pedestrian area, but there was no funding, and it was brought forward to strategic planning. In that time, there was an arbitrary increase of speed from 25 to 30 kilometers an hour, and at the last meeting, Mr. Weir advised that he was recommending it be increased to 40 kilometers an hour. Considering all the sensitivity in the area, the narrowness of the road, the lack of pedestrian improvements, we're very concerned about arbitrary increases of speed in the area. The Motor Act does require a bylaw to pass for municipalities who don't use the default speed of 50 kilometers an hour. So we asked for that bylaw. We've never received a reply. I spoke with Councillor Westbrook when he was chair. He didn't recall the bylaw being passed. We haven't had a reply. And now to increase the speed again twice in a short period of time, when there's a lot of community sensitivity for that area, it really concerns us. And we've been getting feedback that, you know, there's still increased concern. Without any improvements to the pedestrian area, if the speeding isn't a priority for the town, we can understand the data and, you know, support our safety questions. But it's still a narrow roadway.
Mm-hmm.
The Act allows 20 kilometers an hour speeds. There had been a plan at one point to improve the pedestrian area, and we asked, you know, if that could be considered, and we were advised there's no funding. So is there an update on that, and would the town consider reviewing, first off, is there a bylaw even to support it? Because there's no bylaw, there's no legal enforcement available, if I understand correctly.
So my understanding is that there is no bylaw at present. I'm not aware of that. The only reduced speed areas we have at present are like school zones and things that are more mandated. But it's not necessarily a bad idea. But I would want to get, because I'm sort of stepping in new to the conversation, I'd want to know sort of what the background is on that a little bit more. Because to your point, there's been a lot of conversations you've had with different people. So the first step would be just to collate all that information and then look at where that fits with the current priorities for the East Family Transportation Plan, and then make sure that it's either something that is funded during this term or there's strong reasons as to why it wouldn't be. To respond to those concerns, because to your point, it's very narrow, and there are pedestrians actively using it. I'm thinking here near my parents' house on Eagle Crest Drive, there was a weird turn where they made it curving to try to reduce speed, but there were some turns that were very blind, and you had pedestrians right close to the edge, and it was pretty unsafe. So that was addressed in the last turn. But I'm not as familiar with this stretcher road, but it's a good conversation to follow up on.
Okay.
because it does sound like it's something that's been an issue for a while.
Yeah, so if there's no bylaw that was passed to support the speed increase, if it was done arbitrarily, could it not go back down to the lower speed?
That's a good question. The other question I would think of is the first step number is 40 kilometers. Sorry. But I do know that like, you do have first family, which is 40, right? And that's the lower speed. So I'm not sure. That's a good thing to follow up on. I don't know.
Sorry, this hasn't been reported before, and I think there's been quite an extensive response to this given to the Qualcomm Woods Resident Association. I think there's a non-standard posted speed. It's like 25. Should be in multiples of 10. Should be 20, 30, 40. The data collected there is there's extremely low volume, and there isn't really an excessive speed issue. You know, it's like 40 would even be appropriate by the E85 that was noted. The county can post speeds on sections as it's within the jurisdiction. It's unrealistic to post speeds at unreasonably low levels. And I think the RCMP will support that. And if we put up a sign for 20 kilometers an hour, I don't think you can expect the RCMP to come and enforce it, especially on such a low volume road where there are new incidents. So, I mean, the narrowness of the road is almost a little bit self-regulating. We do have a plan for better pedestrian access on a separated walkway, which is something we're trying to do in more places in town. Until that happens, I know it's not ideal. But I would be recommending to council to not falsely post a speed that will not be respected by the public and will not be enforced by the RCMP.
Okay. Well, I do think that it would be good to get all the information on that.
We can pull it out and streamline it again.
Yeah. Sorry.
So could you provide the data that you had? Because I remember when you provided it at the time, there was speeding on that section. On the section from 19A to Dogwood, there wasn't significant speeding, but on the narrow section, there was speeding. There was even 104 kilometers an hour in the 24-kilometer zone. I understand that it's pretty excessive, and I understand that one's an outlier, as you call it, but for that section of the road, there was actually a good amount of speeding. The volume wasn't there, which would then lead to enforcement by the RCMP. But the actual speeding was there and the sensitivity of the community. We've had one resident have their pet killed. We've had people contact you. At least six people contacted the town requesting action on it. There's been the issue. You know, we've raised, I can provide, share with the correspondence we have that provides the background on it. And without a bylaw, now that you know, confirmed that there's no bylaw, there's no legal authority for that speed that's posted now.
I don't think that's the case.
I'm not aware of that. I didn't know the conversation about the multiples of 10, because it was, the sign was not.
It was 25.
The sign was not a standard sign. But I can't remember what it went to from 25 to 40 or.
Well, we know that it was no standard sign,
yeah.
So it should at least be a 30.
Yeah.
And.
According to the Act for Narrow Roads.
But the V85 data did not suggest that 20 is a speed post. The V85 speed suggested it could even be close to 40.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for me, I just think for this, the person is just getting the information. And then,
so maybe just for my clarity, legally, if there's no bylaw supporting a posted speed limit, is there authority to enforce this by speed limit?
Speed limits are enforced if there is a sign posted by the authority. So we would have to, if we were to prosecute a ticket, we would have to prove that it was directed by a person of authority.
Okay. And they have the authority through a bylaw.
I'm not going to speak to that because I don't know that, but I know our authority under the Motor Vehicle Act to issue a ticket. Under the Motor Vehicle Act, a sign, if it's a speed sign or a traffic control device, it has to be directed by a person of authority. So, for example, that comes into play when shopping centers, for example, put up speed signs. Those are not erected by a person of authority because that's a private property. We don't enforce speed on private property. So if it did come up in court and someone said to me, Sergeant, how do you know this was sign was directed by a person of authority, I would have to have my ducks in a row and say, well, I contacted MOTI and I know that they have posted all signs on Highway 19 and 110 between here and here. And I'm satisfied that they are the person authority. And same if there was a ticket to be issued in town, And the dispute said, well, Sergeant North, how do you know the direct person has already lied before coming here to court? I consulted with, you know, the town engineer who confirmed that. So I don't know the answer to that, but that is more that is a more vehicle access.
Yeah.
That's directed by person's authority. So the town, whoever directed the signs, would have to make sure they have their authority. So
I can provide the chair with it, but basically it's a motor vehicle act. Indicates that the municipality desired speed limits outside the default municipal speed of 50 kilometers an hour. They are required by the legislation to pass a bylaw for the relevant speed to be legal and enforceable. And it says subject to section 2 and 3, which refers to the defaults and construction. I think a municipality may by bylaw direct the rated speed at which a person may drive or operate a motor vehicle on a highway in the municipality.
I think we've got to check about First Avenue then. Because that has a lower speed already, and has a signage for it. But no, it's a good question.
Okay, thank you. So I'll provide you the correspondence as well.
Thank you. Okay, and Bernie, I don't think Bernadette's going to raise anything. Oh, sir. Oh, sorry, I didn't see you, Bill. Bill, is there anything like that?
I have nothing to add.
Okay, thank you very much. And Lori, can you hear us? I'll take that as a
yes. I don't have anything to add either.
Okay, thank you so much. My apologies for not seeing you guys on the screen. Sorry about that. I'm not used to this two directions at once today. So at that point, we've sort of set the run table. There are a few things to follow up on. And also, I think there'll be a lot of people starting up some council meetings in the near future. With that, then I just ask for a motion of adjournment. Anyone who takes time? Thank you. Okay, so we're adjourned. Thank you so much, everyone. Appreciate your time. Thank you. Thank you.